Stack. I'm the host, Joanne, and I'll be joined by a guest talking about something that makes them smile, even though I probably don't know much about it. I have two guidelines, no punching or pushing, so we're aiming to discuss these topics without insulting anything else or pressing political and social issues. We're just here to learn new things and share the things that bring us joy.
Let's get into it.
So this week, I am back with Samus. Listeners might remember her from some of our episodes on space and from our very first episode ever about stars. I'm inviting Samus back, one, because she's wonderful and fun to talk to.
Liar.
No, you are fun to talk to. But also, this is my last planned episode of the Turtle Stack. I'm wrapping things up just to give myself a little bit of time. It's been a lot of fun, a great experience. I've loved talking to so many new people, but it's time for me to go on to other things. So I thought it would be really fun to have my first guest back as my last guest and see what we get into today. So what is it that we are going to be talking about to wrap things up today, Samus?
Well, I thought that since we opened up with an episode on stars, that we could finish up with an episode that kind of covers the death of stars, or specifically black holes.
This is something I'm excited to learn about. We've talked a little bit before, and it's kind of one of those things where I don't really know a lot about black holes. I feel like they started popping up a few years ago, and like sci-fi and stuff like that is kind of like this weird, spooky thing that exists out in space, and now they've gotten more commonplace as far as like people thinking that they know what they are or understanding them a little bit more, but I think there's still a lot of like mystery and confusion there.
A lot, yes.
So I guess it would be kind of fun to talk about like when we started learning about black holes and kind of like what we in general expect them to be before we get to some of like the more specific, like interesting things about them.
Well, so black holes as a concept were sort of discovered by Einstein in 16, somewhere around there. Einstein published some of his first papers real early in the 1900s. 1905, I think, was his first one. And by the time I think he was 26 years old, he published his paper on general relativity. General relativity is where he kind of introduced us to the idea of black holes. It kind of showed itself as somewhat of an anomaly in math, where when you gain so much mass, gravity kind of pulls everything down into a single point, and it acts real super weird. And we don't know, even now, we don't know everything, obviously, that there is to know about how things react around black holes and what to expect. But we do know some very interesting ways to classify black holes. So I had mentioned that the paper that kind of introduced black holes, the general relativity, was written in, I believe, 1916. It wasn't until 1964, that astronomers were able to identify the first black hole candidate. Now, one of the kind of weird things about black holes, we call them black holes because gravity, the pull of gravity is strong enough that not even light can escape. So basically, you see nothing but blackness when you look at them. So you have to look at other parts of the light spectrum, the electromagnetic spectrum, in order to be able to identify where they are or what exactly they're doing. In 1964, what we saw was this really bright X-ray source in the Cygnus constellation that we called Cygnus X1. And there was a lot of debate as to whether or not this signal that they were picking up was anything of interest. So it was about the mid-1970s, we hadn't confirmed whether or not that it was a black hole because we didn't quite know how at that point. There was actually a wager placed between Stephen Hawking and one of his colleagues, Kip Thorne. Hawking thought that it wasn't a black hole. Kip Thorne thought it was. I don't remember exactly what it was they wagered, but I think it was a book. Don't quote me on that. And it took until, get that, it took until 1990 for us to have enough evidence to state that conclusively, yeah, this is a black hole. In 1990, Hawking conceded his loss in that wager. So you kind of think about it. It took us from 1916, when the paper was originally written by Einstein, up through 1990 for us to be able to basically conclusively confirm the existence of these black holes that that Einstein predicted. And 1916 to 1990 seems like a long time to confirm some of this stuff, but you have to realize that we've been working with scientific advancements on the terms of not decades, but centuries. Isaac Newton's Principia Mathematica was published in the 1600s, and that's when we first kind of, we first got calculus, and we first started kind of understanding the math behind gravity and the motion of the planets and that kind of stuff. So if you really look at it, it's really kind of a long time to us, but a short time overall that these things were discovered. I think it's a kind of a just a fascinating thought experiment, kind of, to realize that these things happened in one person's lifetime, right?
Right.
It's just, it blows my mind.
Yeah. I always just really like when, and I feel like this has come up in our other conversations too, but anytime humans are able to, like, predict or know something without seeing it directly, I think is a really interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. And it didn't stop then. Okay, so you consider 1916 to 1990, that includes, like, the atomic age, where we started learning things about the electron and fusion, not the electron, the atom, down to electrons and learning about fusion, and, like, all of our electronics didn't come until, you know, very, very recently. And and these ideas came before we even had, you know, the radio telescopes, for that matter, you know? So at the time that these things were kind of theorized about, we didn't have even a glimmering of the technology that we would need to actually not only see, but identify and kind of say conclusively that, yep, them's be black holes there. And since then, since the 1990s, things have, you know, really, we've got the technology now, we got all that stuff in our pocket, and so they really, really sped up. And as of right now, on the most concise list I could find, we've identified 75 supermassive black holes or supermassive black hole candidates, 11 intermediate size black hole or candidates, and then 27 stellar black hole or candidates. So what that means, basically, a stellar mass black hole is the size of our sun to, like, 100 times the size of our sun. In between the intermediate mass, they're bigger. They're like, I don't know, let's say 1,000 to, I don't know how far it goes, but supermassive black holes are several million times the mass of our sun. They're the ones that sit in the center of galaxies that current theory says they're either created by galaxy creation, or galaxies come into being around them kind of because of them. They're sort of like a chicken and the egg thing, at least as far as I understand. I am no astronomer or cosmologist. My understanding of these things is a layperson's understanding at best.
I didn't even realize that there were different classes of black holes. Like, I've always just assumed that they were a black hole is a black hole. So, like, that alone is kind of neat, or very neat, I should say. But I wanted, before we got, like, too much further into some of the details, for anybody that doesn't know, can you actually kind of define what a black hole is, or, like, how a black hole is made? Just to make sure that any listeners that, like, their only knowledge is from sci-fi, that they kind of know what we're, like, actually talking about. What is this actual thing that has been discovered?
Yeah, no problem. Well, in general, sci-fi doesn't get it too horribly wrong. At least in the general, the very kind of general overarching concepts behind them. So basically, when a star starts to run out of fuel, it burns through all of its hydrogen. Well, it doesn't burn through it. It fuses all its hydrogen into helium. And at that point, it starts to burn less efficiently. It burns through its helium. It burns through its lithium. At that point, after helium, astronomers consider it to be metals, basically. Anything that's not hydrogen or helium is a metal to an astronomer. So as the sun burns, it fuses together atoms to make heavier elements. Heavier elements burn less efficiently, And so eventually that kind of outward pushing force of the heat and the fusion releasing energy can't sustain its battle against gravity. And if a star is big enough, once the push of the energy trying to get out of the sun is overwhelmed by gravity, there's an explosion, kaboom, called a supernova. And then to get to there, sometimes it goes two different ways. Like our star, the sun will collapse down into a white dwarf. We do not get black holes here because our sun is not big enough. But stars that are large enough, the remnants that are left after the supernova kind of blows off the blanket, basically everything that's left collapses under gravity into what's called a singularity. So the concept of a singularity is one of the things that science fiction kind of tends to get wrong. They make it out like there's this extra huge, oh my god, gravitational force that's sucking everything into the center of a black hole, and that's kind of not how it works. So a black hole has the same amount of gravitational force as anything else of that mass that doesn't happen to be, you know, in a black hole space. So if you compress the Earth down into the size of a black hole, the moon is going to keep orbiting just like it is.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to change. It's not going to get thrown off. It's not going to go anywhere. And that's kind of something that science fiction, it's been a little bit better, but in the past is kind of, it portrays black holes as these massive monsters that rampage through space, eating up everything in their path. And that's just not the case. They tend to, you know, if one is created, it's going to stay relatively in the same orbit that it was in. If it's sharing its orbit with like as part of a binary system, it'll keep orbiting its partner star the same way. They're the same mass and they act the same way as things that take up a bigger space. The thing that becomes cool about black holes is once you pass the event horizon. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. Like, everything is pretty cool about a black hole. but the interesting points are the event horizon and beyond. We don't know what happens necessarily beyond the event horizon or at the singularity. Our understanding of physics breaks down. Einstein's paper on general relativity didn't describe what happens at the singularity. It just hinted that singularities occur as kind of a nebulous, that's a thing that goes there. but our physics, like Newtonian physics, breaks down when you even consider black holes. It goes, the amount of forces and things that you're calculating, just Newtonian physics can't handle it. Relativity can get there, but once you're there, it doesn't know what to do. It's just like, yeah, it's a point. Maybe? Yeah, so it's super weird. We know at the event horizon, that's where you'll see a bright ring of energy and matter, question mark. It tends to give off a lot of light because there's a lot of interactions that are going on, because everything, that's a where things orbit, right? They orbit for possibly eternity there. And so there's bazillions and bazillions of interactions happening there, and energy gets released, and that's what we tend to see when we look at a black hole, when we can look at a black hole. Once you pass over the event horizon, the speed that you would need to escape the gravitational pull of that singularity is faster than the speed of light, and nothing can go faster than the speed of light. That's the speed limit of the universe currently that we know of. So it basically becomes, the gravitation is so strong, it becomes impossible to make it out.
So, you know, when people talk about black holes, a lot of times we're talking about things getting like sucked in, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But when we talk about how like massive and like dense they are, is it really like a sucking? Like, is there a large space inside of a small point, or is it more of a crushing, the same way like a larger clump of coal is crushed into a diamond?
That's a good question. It could very well be both. Like I said, our understanding kind of breaks down quite a bit. I've heard a lot of different thoughts on it. Most, let's say, reputable sources that I've looked through and paid attention to, they basically kind of shrug at that point. But kind of strictly by the theory of general relativity, time and space are kind of interconnected, and gravity affects space by bending and warping it. So in that singularity that's a black hole, it could literally be that the space, there's enough space there to support that mass, you know, and it's just so very warped that, you know, that's where the escape velocity comes from, the speed of light thing. It might not be a tiny, tiny point once you're down there. It might just be that space is all bunched up down there because there's so much gravity. I don't know. They don't know. We can't send anything in there to find out because we're not going to get it back.
Okay. I'm going to assume that the inside of a black hole is like the string inside of a ball of yarn. Like, it just, there's a lot of it all wrapped up and it's just in a small spot, but if you stretch it all out, it would be bigger. That's what I'm going to assume, and we can move on.
That is a kind of interesting thing, because I enjoyed that you say string specifically, but it might have been a little bit better if you said like spaghetti, because one of the things that happens because of the, can we say that it happens? I don't know. One of the things that theoretically happens, there we go. One of the things that theoretically happens for an entity that goes over the event horizon is it gets spaghettified. So the difference in gravity, the tidal force, what we call it, from one point, any one point to another point, even an inch away, is great enough and is of big enough contrast to literally stretch and distort everything into spaghetti strands, basically little tiny spaghetti strands. And so like the idea that it's, yeah, it's a yarn ball in there. It's a spaghetti ball, like that just all the spaghetti stuck.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm good. I've got what I need to understand.
And so I know I've said like this, spent this whole time saying, oh my God, they're so complicated, we don't understand them and all that stuff. But really, and this is always blown my mind, there are only three characteristics of a black hole. They're super simple objects to identify and to classify. There's only three features of them that change from one black hole to another. Okay. Composition doesn't matter. Like, obviously location matters. It's like if you have a black hole and you ignore location. But it's mass, it's spin, and it's charge. That's it. Those are the only three things you need to describe any black hole ever. That's it. There's no other difference. So they're surprisingly actually simple to like quote unquote understand, but so there's a couple of other interesting things about black holes. And I know I said that, you know, nothing escapes a black hole necessarily, but yet as they, you know, go about their life feeding and resting and feeding and resting and whatever, they do actually give off what's called Hawking radiation. And that's typically an indication that a small black hole is about to like use up all of its energy and kind of just, you know, shrink and disappear. The smaller a black hole is, the more Hawking radiation it gives off.
Wait, they disappear?
Oh, yeah. Sort of. Yeah. Black holes can die.
So then what happens?
So small black holes, like, they do whatever it is that they do inside the black hole, and they release what's called Hawking radiation, and that Hawking radiation is basically, because mass and energy are the same thing, when we're talking about like this scale of energy. So Hawking radiation is an energy that's being output from black holes and it's taking away from the mass, basically. So the mass of the black hole is being turned into energy, radiating off as Hawking radiation. And a black hole can die that way.
Okay. Like you said, disappears. And I've always been told matter can neither be created nor destroyed. And like, I get the whole, like, it can be packed into a inverted pocket that doesn't make sense, or a spaghetti machine or whatever. But you said disappears, and I really need you to tell me that you used a poor choice of words.
I used a poor choice of words because it doesn't, the black hole as an entity, it dissipates, I think might be a better word.
Okay.
It dissipates as Hawking radiation.
Okay, we're good.
Okay, and so the other thing that is super neat about black holes is that light doesn't escape, right? That's why they're called black holes. But they do affect gravity, and they are a gravitational entity, and so they have an effect on space, because gravity bends space. That's kind of what we learned through the whole relativity thing. So when a black hole moves through space, like orbiting another star, or, you know, going for a stroll because it got kicked out of its galaxy or something like that, which we don't know is really a thing, that's just... I'm kind of personifying it, because I can. Anthropomorphic black holes are amazing. but when you have a black hole orbiting another massive object, they tend to, like, well, they don't tend to. Sometimes their orbits decay, and so they end up kind of crashing into each other. And as they kind of go down the drain, they spin faster and faster and faster. The faster they spin, the more momentum they have, quote-unquote momentum, and the more they distort space. And so space will actually ripple around these ridiculously fast orbital decays in, like, black holes and neutron stars. Yeah, so the orbital decay between black holes and neutron stars will, and other black holes, will cause space to literally vibrate, and we've built machines here that can detect those vibrations. Now, these vibrations are... like, you will never notice them. They are, like, the full vibration is less than the width of a proton. But somehow, we've used our brain meats to figure out how to build a couple of devices around the world that can actually detect these tiny, itty-bitty, just unfathomably small vibrations in space-time. And because we have multiple of them, when we get a signal, we can kind of triangulate where it is. And sort of figure out where it is in space. And we've done that a number of times so far. And basically we're using gravitational waves to not only detect black hole and neutron star mergers and that kind of stuff, but we're learning more about, like, structures of black holes based on, you know, the nature of these waves. And we're very, very, very early in the study of these things, but I think gravitational waves are kind of the next big thing, like the next big push in astronomy and learning about the stars. It's not even in the electromagnetic spectrum anymore. It's just space-time itself telling us about itself billions of light years away. It's, well, okay, maybe not that far, but it's freaking cool.
Yeah, that's really freaking cool. Like, it is very neat to be a part of the human species. Like, my goodness. Basically, the way I see it is we have no business understanding any of this stuff.
We made it our business. Man is a very curious creature. Be it beneficial or very not beneficial, we are driven to understand things, and man, space is a thing, ain't it?
It sure is. Well, unfortunately, I do think we're going to be wrapping things up pretty quickly here. Were there any, like, final things that you were hoping to get to that we haven't touched on yet?
Nah, man. I think space as a thing is a perfect place to wrap it up.
I think so, too. Well, then thank you for joining me on the final episode. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a hell of a journey. You've done some awesome stuff with this podcast. It's a great, great listen.
Aw, that's very kind. Yeah, I appreciate everyone who's listened, and, you know, I hope you all find other positive things to listen to, because that's really the main thing that this was about, is trying to spread some new information, try new things, connect with new people, and just, you know, there's a lot of cool and interesting things out there. There's a lot of stuff that you can discover to make you happy, and like, I hope this was a path to some of it. And if not, just go re-listen to the episodes. They're still there for you. So it's been great. And talking about space and learning about all this different stuff has been really, really cool with you, Samus. So thank you again for being on.
Well, thank you for having me.
If you're a curious person that likes encouraging others, please consider subscribing to discover a new topic with me each week. If you have a topic you'd like to add to the stack, please email theturtlestack@gmail.com. You could also help grow the community by liking, rating, and telling others. Thanks for listening!